Գումտրեք SBS հայերենը.
It's not every year that we have a book launch in Melbourne, especially on Armenians, but there is one next week, and it concerns the Armenians of Iran, written by none other than our own Dr. James Berry. James, welcome to SBS Radio.
Thank you, Vahe.
James, you have been in our studios before to talk about your research on Armenians in Iran and your travels to Iran to research. To recap, how your interest started on the Armenian community of Iran?
So I started out as an anthropology student in Monash University back in the middle of the last decade. And I was interested in diaspora studies, so the idea of a diaspora, a group of people who are scattered around the world but maintain a myth of a homeland and also maintain their language and religion and other aspects of culture throughout many generations. So I was interested in that topic, the Jewish diaspora, the Irish diaspora, but also I was interested in the Middle East region and also Russia. So, of course, because the Armenians are one of the principal diaspora groups in that area, I was drawn to reading about the Armenians. In my final year of my undergraduate degree, I completed an honours thesis, which was on Haygaganochun, or Armenianness in the Armenian diaspora, which was essentially looking at what were the fundamental elements that made up Armenian identity that were maintained over several generations and into modern times. After I completed that, I was invited to apply for a PhD program through the Monash Asia Institute. They liked what I'd been working on, but they asked me to work on a project to do with an Armenian community somewhere in Asia. They were pushing me towards India, but of course I felt that the Indian community was not significant enough in terms of numbers to be of real value in what I wanted to do. So I suggested Iran, because Iran still has a significant Armenian community there. And they said, yeah, that falls within Asia. So that's how I was led to the topic. Through my own family background as well is where I first was drawn to the idea of diaspora studies. I come from an Irish family with a strong connection to Gaelic language and culture, and also to the religious side of things. So that's essentially the personal side that led me to the topic. But it was over time that I gradually came to study Armenians. Of course, being an anthropologist, it was important to learn the Armenian language if I was going to undertake any study, in which case I started taking a class, an adult class, through the Aginyan school that was held on Saturdays that was run by Ani Adilyan. And from there, I met a number of people in the Armenian community who continued to encourage my work and also helped me when I went to Iran. That's essentially how I was led to this topic.
But you learned Western Armenian, but in Iran they speak Eastern Armenian.
Yeah. So not only do they speak Eastern Armenian, they speak Eastern Armenian in their own particular way, especially in Tehran, all over Iran. But in Tehran, they speak a variety which is very close to standard Eastern Armenian, but of course they have a very peculiar accent. So I learned Western Armenian because that was the dialect spoken here. And when I started learning, I didn't have my mind on Iran. When I started working on Iran, I made myself familiar with some of the aspects of the grammar and what makes Eastern Armenian different from Western Armenian. But over the years, I've just continued to use Western Armenian, mostly because it's the home base, but also because most of my Iranian-Armenian interlocutors who I've spoken to on the topic, they think it's kind of like your thing. You speak Western Armenian, even though you're studying in Eastern Armenian people. And it still surprises people. Like a couple of years ago, I ran into a scholar from Armenia in a conference in the United States. We were aware of each other, not because we'd ever met, but just we were aware of each other's work. And when she heard me speaking, she was incredibly surprised, because she thought someone who was working on Iran would speak Eastern Armenian. And I can speak Eastern Armenian, but it's more natural to speak Western.
What about Farsi?
Yeah, I learned Farsi as well, because I was studying in Iran, and it was important for me to learn that language for a couple of reasons. One, because I was looking at Iran as a country. That's the national language. Also, a lot of the literature that's been written on Iranian Armenians by Iranian Armenians has been written in Farsi, because they for a couple of reasons. One, in that it's Armenian is the spoken language for the community, but Persian Farsi is definitely the written language, the language of education. So they're more familiar with it in terms of written expression, but also because of concerted efforts by the community to introduce themselves to the wider Iranian society, they often publish books about their culture, their history in Persian rather than in Armenian.
How many times you traveled to Iran?
I've been there 3 times. I haven't been for a number of years. So I first went in 2010 and I was there for 6 months. And then, of course, because of sanctions, I was unable to stay because I didn't have access to my income, my bank accounts. I ran out of money. Second time I went for a bit over a month in 2014 and I traveled around a little bit. And then in 2015, again, the same thing, visited Iran, met with people, did some interviews and met with a few friends.
And while in Iran, what were your impressions about minorities living in an Islamic country?
Well, it's an interesting question because the term minority in Persian is very specific to religious minorities, but especially those that are recognized by the government. So the constitution from 1906 onwards has recognized 4 principal religious minorities, which are the Jewish minority, the Zoroastrian minority, the Armenian minority, and the Assyrian minority. The Assyrian minority is also collated with the Chaldean community as well, so they're seen as one constitutionally. So the term Akaliyat really refers to those communities, and they have a special status with the constitution. They have representation in the parliament, which is guaranteed. They have they're more or less left to their own devices and allowed to run their own institutions fairly autonomously. However, there are other religious minorities in Iran who don't have recognition, and also they suffer from varying degrees of marginalization. So the most famous would probably be the Baha'i community that are specifically outlawed in Iran. There's also the Sunni Muslim community, which make up maybe as many as 10% of the population, who are effectively a religious minority, even though it is an Islamic country. And then you have other lesser known religions, a group called Ahle Haq, which are amongst Kurdish people in the west of Iran, probably has about 1 million followers, very similar to the Yazidi community, though not the same, the Yazidi community of Iraq. Then you have other smaller communities of Sikhs, Mandeans, which are a Gnostic sect who follow the teachings of John the Baptist, and a few others. Those groups suffer more marginalization. Sometimes it's simply just neglect. They're not considered to be separate religions. So they're encouraged or forced to classify themselves as Shia Muslims. Or they are suffering from targeting from certain aspects of the society which consider them heretical, as is the case of Baha'i, the Baha'i religion. In addition to all of this, there's also the ethnic issue, which is, Armenians are both an ethnic and a religious minority. But Iran has a very strange way of dealing with ethnic minorities. Language is the key determinant of being an ethnic minority in Iran. But there is some, some conjecture about whether groups such as the Azerbaijani people, the Azerbaijani language, which is spoken by perhaps 25% of the population, whether it's truly a minority considering how well integrated that community or that group of speakers are in general society, how well represented they are politically and economically. But and these are issues that I'm looking at now after completing the book on Armenians. I've started to look more widely at questions about what it is, what minority means in Iran. And of course, to summarize everything I've said and to answer your question in one sentence, it really depends on which community you come from, how you're treated in Iran. Though one final thing I would say is the Armenian community, of all the recognized groups, have a very peculiar status in Iran, which is largely due to historical reasons, the perception of Armenians as industrious, as people who have contributed a lot to the country while keeping to themselves, means that there is this general view in society, which is slightly more positive than it is, say, for the Jewish minority, who unfortunately, not only with the association with Israel, but also historically were considered to be of a much lower status than Armenians.
James, returning to the book, how you transform a thesis to a book? And which is the more challenging, writing an academic work or writing for a book?
They both present their own challenges. I wrote the thesis as a thesis, and then I transformed it into a book. Some people who are doing PhDs now try to write their thesis as a book so they can publish it almost after. But I wrote mine as a thesis. Now, what that essentially means for those outside of academia, a thesis has components such as a methodology, how you went about your research that has to be explained in detail, and a large conceptual framework, which is where you deal with theoretical ideas. So theoretical ideas that are relevant to the case study you're doing, but are very abstract. It's kind of like philosophical texts talking about things such as a concept like ethnicity, and you go into great detail talking about all of the different writers and how they've tried to define it and how they've applied that term. That's, of course, is really boring to read if you're not an academic person. It's incredibly boring to read if you are an academic person, but it's an essential component of the assessment process when writing a thesis. So when I was turning it into a book, I had the pleasure of removing all of that stuff. With a book, essentially, the tricky part was getting the introduction right, because an introduction in an academic book or in a book of this kind is usually the only thing that people read. Especially other scholars, if they're looking at it, they'll only read the introduction. Very few will read the entire book unless they're interested in the topic. So getting that presented right and getting it in a way that it was presented in an interesting fashion, that took me several months. The rest of it was down to updating, because I'd been back to Iran twice since I did my PhD, and adding additional events that had happened, and just rounding it out so that the text was easier to read and more accessible to a general audience. But I think actually doing the research and writing the thesis was harder than doing the book, in summary.
And what's so special about the photo on the cover of the book? What's the story behind it?
So, the story behind it is the photo that I wanted to use was not of enough resolution to be a book cover. So Cambridge University Press told me that I could choose from a series of... I could choose a photograph from a series that were available to them. I chose that one, and I chose that one with consultation with a colleague of mine who I respect his opinion on images very, very much, because he's an art historian. His name's Antonio Gonzalez Arandona. I chose it because it's an image of an Iranian girl, schoolgirl, who is clearly visiting the Armenian church, the cathedral in Isfahan, one of the 17th century great churches of Isfahan. And it's symbolic because she's standing on the threshold of the church and looking in with some level of curiosity. And I felt that was representative of what I was saying in the book. You have this Armenian community that the wider Muslim society knows about, but they rarely get to see glimpses of what the life of the Armenian community is like, because of the laws of the country that generally keep Muslims and non-Muslims separate in social settings. So I thought that represented the overall argument of the book, and the way that wider Iranian society looks into an Armenian community that they know exists but don't know very much about, and they find fascinating at the same time.
It took a while to publish the book, but what was the issue with the delay?
Well, I submitted it as a thesis in 2013, and I must admit I went through a stage of about a year where I couldn't even look at it because I was just exhausted from writing it. Then I started working at Deakin University, and I went back to Iran twice, and also I did additional research. But it was really in September of 2015 that I sat down to write the introduction, or to fix it so the introduction worked well. It took me about 2 months. All in all, it took about 9 months for me to get the manuscript together. So in the middle of 2016, I sent it to Cambridge. They'd already expressed interest in it when I'd raised it with them. And it took about a year for it to be reviewed. Then I responded to the reviews. And then it took a year for the overall review process to be finished when those that had reviewed it approved of my changes. Then it goes into production, which takes 12 months. But also, because my book became available at the end of last year, it was too late in the year for it to be a 2018 publication. So Cambridge made it a 2019 publication, which is why I'm launching it this year as opposed to last year.
Did you include everything you wanted to include in the book, or there are sections you left it out?
On the Armenians, I feel like I was able to cover everything, or at least point to things that I wasn't able to talk about because they weren't immediately relevant. I know that the book will eventually need to be updated, either by someone else or by myself, but I felt that I covered all the main topics as I saw them. I guess if I was going to, I mean, I shouldn't be saying my book has shortcomings, but if I'm going to be honest, if I'd had the opportunity to spend significant amount of times in Isfahan and Tabriz, I would have, I feel that I would have been able to do a better comparative study. However, the fact that I did it in Tehran, which is the heart and the lifeblood of the Armenian community in Iran, it makes me satisfied that even though it doesn't cover the entire community of Iran fully, at least I have the major influential community, most influential community, politically, culturally, and economically, covered in this book.
When writing or thinking about, you know, writing the book, did you have a specific target in mind?
I started out with the question of what is it like to be a Christian in an Islamic Republic, which stayed the main question. I expected to, because of what I'd read, I expected to find an Armenian community that, for all of their situation, considered themselves to be Iranian. So I was quite shocked when I went to Iran and started talking to people and interviewing people to find that Armenians consider themselves to be quite different, that they're Iranians on paper, but they're not Iranians. Iranians were Muslims. So I started to look a little bit more on that, and I found, of course, this is one line of thought, and there are very diverse approaches to it. But I noticed that I concluded that the Islamic Revolution itself, or the Iranian Revolution and the creation of an Islamic Republic, had a tremendous influence on how Armenians saw themselves within the state. And they reacted in many the same ways as most of the Iranian society, except they had their religious and cultural difference. So many members of Iranian society who feel alienated by the Islamic Republic tend to gravitate towards history and cultural aspects which are secular, or at least appear secular. So Iranian or Persian poetry, which of course it's actually very much religiously influenced, but it's not doctrinal Islam. It's to some extent Sufi. I don't want to use that word without being critical of it, but it's, I guess, what in general terms would be called Sufism. But also the pre-Islamic history of Iran. This is very strong in middle class and all through Iran, they recognize it. But those that are unhappy with the way that things are in Iran, they tend to go towards nationalism that way. And in the same way, I mean, the Armenian community, people have gone to the Armenianness as why they are different, or why they are different from a government system which is failing people in many ways. That's the home that they retreat to, their Armenianness. So I came to understand it as a general trend in Iranian society, but also seeing that they approach it from a different fashion because of their religious and ethnic difference.
James, the book launches next week. Mm-hmm. Where and when?
So it's at the Kathleen Syme Centre, which is just across the road from Melbourne University in Parkville, Carlton, near Lygon Street. It starts at 5:30, so I mean we'll be opening up at around after 5, but we'll start expecting people at 5:30. It won't go for too long. It's just simply a matter of launching the book and celebrating it a little bit, and I'll talk a bit more about it then. But yeah, of course, everyone is welcome. Yeah, if anyone has any questions, just send me an email.
Are you planning to launch the book in other major cities and capitals?
I had thought of Canberra and also in the United States, in Los Angeles, especially because of the Armenian and Iranian communities there. I don't think I'll get to launch it in Tehran, unfortunately, but that is a plan for next year.
Is the book available for sale?
It is available for sale. At the moment, it's a little bit expensive, but that's a price is going to come down. I understand now it's under discount, but it's going to come down as it goes from hardback to soft cover. But it's available online. You can purchase it through all of the major websites of Amazon and others. And I believe Dimex and Booktopia have it as well.
And how are you marketing your book besides talking to SBS Armenian and Farsi?
I've been doing promotional videos, which is new for me because I've never done anything like that before. But I've made those videos in English, of course, but also in Armenian and Persian, just so they can reach a wider audience, and sharing them on social media. They have been generating a lot of interest and a lot of comments from people, some helpful and some, well, I guess people who haven't read the book but have a strong opinion on the topic have been letting me know, which is all good, of course, all very welcome. But I've been using that as a method of promoting the book, in addition to this book launch.
James, thank you very much for your time, and you came to the studio and talked to us, and next is the Farsi program.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Հավնե, լայք, բաժնեք, գործիկը թայտնե, հետևե SPS հայրենին հիմնադրի վրա։